passes 40 minutes before we do, so I can still get back to Bayview in plenty of time for the first bell. It's stuffy in the car, and I lower both front seat windows as I pull into an empty spot and turn the car off. Thing is, I need to be doing stuff. If I don't, I think about Nate too much, about where he is, what he's going through, and the fact that he won't talk to me. I mean, I understand he has limited communication options, obviously, but they're not non-existent. I asked Mrs. McCauley if I could visit, and she told me Nate didn't want me there, which stings. She thinks he wants to protect me, but I'm not so sure. He's pretty used to people giving up on him, and maybe he's decided to do it to me first. A flash of red catches my eye, and an ancient Camaro with a shiny fender parks a few spaces away from me. A short, dark-haired boy gets out and hauls a backpack from the passenger seat, looping one strap over his shoulder. I don't intend to say anything, but he glances my way as he walks by my window, and before I can stop myself, I blurt out, "Hey!" He pauses, curious brown eyes meeting mine.
"Hey, I know you. You're the girl from the Bayview investigation. Bronte, right?"
"Bronwyn." Since I've already blown my cover, might as well go all in.
"What are you doing here?"
He's dressed like he's waiting for a 90s grunge comeback in a flannel shirt over a Pearl Jam t-shirt. My eyes skitter to his car. I should just ask, right? That's what I came for. But now that I'm actually talking to this boy, the whole thing seems ridiculous. What am I supposed to say?
"Hey, what's the deal with your oddly timed car accident at a school you don't go to?"
"Waiting for somebody."
He wrinkles his brow at me. "You know people here?"
"Yeah."
"Sort of. I know about your recent car repair, anyway." "Everybody's been talking about you guys. Weird case, huh? The kid who died, he was kind of weird, right? I mean, who even has an app like that? And all that stuff they said on Mikhail Powers? Random."
He seems nervous. My brain chants, "Ask, ask, ask," but my mouth won't obey.
"Well, see ya."
He starts to move past my car.
"Wait!"
My voice unsticks and he pauses. "Can I talk to you for a second?"
"We just were talking."
"Right, but I have an actual question for you. The thing is, when I said I was waiting for somebody, I meant you." He's definitely nervous.
"Why would you be waiting for me? You don't even know me."
"Because of your car," I say. "I saw you get into an accident in our parking lot that day, the day Simon died." He pales and blinks at me.
Why do you think that was me?"
"I saw your license plate," I lie. No need to sell out Luis's brother. "The thing is, the timing was weird, you know? And now someone's been arrested for something I'm sure he didn't do. And I wondered, did you happen to see anything or anyone strange that day? It would help." My voice catches, and tears prick my eyes. I blink them back and try to focus. "Anything you could tell me would help." He hesitates and steps back, looking toward the stream of kids funneling into the school. I wait for him to back away and join them. But instead, he crosses to the other side of my car, opens the passenger door, and climbs inside. I press a button to raise the windows and turn to face him.
"So?"
He runs a hand through his hair.
"This is weird. I'm Sam, by the way. Sam Barron."
"Bronwyn Rojas. But I guess you know that already."
"Yeah. I've been watching the news and wondering if I should say something." but I didn't know if it meant anything. I still don't.
He gives me a quick sideways glance, as though checking for signs of alarm.
We didn't do anything wrong, like illegal, as far as I know.
My spine tingles as I sit up straighter. Who's we?
Me and my buddy. We had the accident on purpose. A guy paid us $1,000 each to do it. Said it was a prank. I mean, wouldn't you? The fender barely cost $500 to fix. The rest was pure profit.
Someone... It's warm in the car with the windows up, and my hands gripping the steering wheel are slick with sweat. I should turn the air conditioning on, but I can't move. Who? Do you know his name?
I didn't, but...
Did he have brown hair and blue eyes? I blurt out.
Yeah.
Jake! He must have gotten away from Luis at some point after all. Was he... Wait, I have a picture in here somewhere. I say, fumbling through my backpack for my phone. I'm sure I took a picture of the homecoming court in September.
I don't need a picture, Sam says. I know who he is.
Really? Like, you know his name? My heart's beating so fast, I can see my chest moving. Are you sure he gave you a real name?
He didn't give me any name. I figured it out later when I saw the news.
I remember those first few stories, with Jake's class picture next to Addie's. A lot of people thought it wasn't fair to show him, but I'm glad they did. I have the homecoming picture pulled up now, and I hand it to Sam. Him, right? Jake Reardon? He blinks at my phone, shakes his head, and hands it back.
No, that's not him. It was someone a lot more closely involved with the whole thing.
My heart's about to explode. If it wasn't Jake, there's only one other boy with dark hair and blue eyes involved in the investigation. Closely involved, no less. And that's Nate. No, no, please, God, no. Who? My voice isn't even a whisper. Sam blows out a sigh and leans against the headrest. He's quiet for the longest seconds of my life, until he says,
"It was Simon Kelleher."
Chapter 28.
Cooper, Wednesday, November 7th, 7:40 p.m. These murder club meetings are becoming a regular thing. We need a new name, though. This time we're at a coffee shop in downtown San Diego, crammed into a back table because our numbers keep expanding. Chris came with me, and Ashton with Addie. Bronwyn's got all her post-it notes on a bunch of manila folders, including the newest one. Simon paid two kids to stage a car accident. She says Sam Barron promised to call Eli and let him know. How that'll help Nate, I have no idea. Why'd you pick this place, Bronwyn? Addie asks. Kind of out of the way. Bronwyn clears her throat and makes a big production of rearranging her post-it notes. No reason. So, anyway, she shoots a business-like look around the table. Thanks for coming. Maeve and I keep going over this stuff, and it never makes any sense. We thought a meeting of the minds might help. Maeve and Ashton return from the counter, balancing our orders on a couple of recyclable trays. They hand drinks around, and I watch Chris methodically open 5 packets of sugar and dump them into his latte. What? He asks, catching my expression. He's in a green polo shirt that brings out his eyes, and he looks really, really good. That still seems like the kind of thing I'm not supposed to notice. You like sugar, huh? It's a dumb thing to say. What I mean is... I have no idea how you take your coffee, because this is the first time we've been out in public together. Chris presses his lips together, which shouldn't be attractive, but is. I feel awkward and jittery and accidentally bump his knee under the table. Nothing wrong with that, Addie says, tipping her cup against Chris's. The liquid inside hers is so pale it barely resembles coffee. Chris and I have been spending more time together, but it doesn't feel natural yet. Maybe I'd gotten used to the sneaking around. Or maybe I haven't come to terms with the fact that I'm dating a guy. I found myself keeping my distance from Chris when we walked from my car to the coffee shop because I didn't want people guessing what we are to each other. I hate that part of me, but it's there. Bronwyn has some kind of steaming tea that looks too hot to drink. She pushes it aside and props one of the manila folders against the wall. Here's all the stuff we know about Simon. He was going to post rumors about us. He paid two kids to stage a car accident. He was depressed. He had a creepy online persona. He and Janae seemed on the outs. He had a thing for Keely. He used to be friends with Jake. Am I missing anything? He deleted my original about that entry, I say. Not necessarily, Bronwyn corrects. Your entry was deleted. We don't know by whom. Fair enough, I guess. And here's what we know about Jake, Bronwyn continues. He wrote at least one of the Tumblr posts, or helped somebody else write it. He wasn't in the school building when Simon died, according to Luis. He is a complete control freak, Ashton interrupts. Addie opens her mouth in protest, but Ashton cuts her off. He is, Addie. He ran every part of your life for 3 years. Then, as soon as you did something he didn't like, he blew up. Bronwyn scribbles, Jake is a control freak, on a post-it with an apologetic glance at Addie. It's a data point, Bronwyn says. Now, what if... The front door bangs, and she goes bright red. What a coincidence. I follow her gaze and see a young guy with wild hair and a scruffy beard enter the coffee shop. He looks familiar, but I can't place him. He spots Bronwyn with an exasperated expression that turns alarmed when he takes in Addie and me. He holds a hand in front of his face.
I don't see you. Any of you.
Then he catches sight of Ashton and does a classic double take, almost tripping over his feet.
Oh. Hi. You must be Addie's sister.
Ashton blinks, confused, looking between him and Bronwyn.
Do I know you?
This is Eli Kleinfelter, Bronwyn says. He's with Until Proven. Their offices are upstairs. He's, Nate's lawyer.
Who cannot talk to you?
Eli says, like he just remembered. He gives Ashton a lingering look, but turns away and heads for the counter. Ashton shrugs and blows on her coffee. I'm sure she's used to having that effect on guys. Addie's eyes are round as she watches Eli's retreating back.
God, Bronwyn, I can't believe you stalked Nate's lawyer.
Bronwyn looks almost as embarrassed as she should be, taking the envelope I'd given her out of her backpack.
I wanted to see if Sam Barron ever got in touch and pass along his information if he hadn't. I thought if I ran into Eli casually, he might talk to me.
Guess not. She darts a hopeful look at Ashton.
I bet he'd talk to you, though.
Addie locks her hands on her hips and juts her chin in outrage.
You can't pimp out my sister.
Ashton smiles wryly and holds out her hand for the envelope.
As long as it's for a good cause. What am I supposed to say?
Tell him he was right, that the car accident at Bayview the day Simon died was staged. The envelope has contact information for the boy Simon paid to do it.
Ashton heads for the counter, and we all sip our drinks in silence. When she returns a minute later, the envelope's still in her hand.
Sam called him, she confirms. He said he's looking into it, he appreciates the information, and you should mind your fucking business.
That's a direct quote. Bronwyn looks relieved and not at all insulted.
Thank you. That's good news. So, where were we?
Simon and Jake, Maeve says, propping her chin in one hand as she gazes at the two manila folders. They're connected. But how?
Excuse me,
Chris says mildly, and everyone looks at him like they'd forgotten he was at the table, which they probably had. He's been quiet since we got here. Maeve tries to make up for it by giving him an encouraging smile.
Yeah? I wonder, Chris says. His English is unaccented and almost perfect, with just a little formality that hints he's from someplace else. There has always been so much focus on who was in the room. That's why the police originally targeted the four of you, because it would be almost impossible for anyone who wasn't in the room to kill Simon. Right? Right, I say. So, Chris removes two post-its from one of the folders. If the killer wasn't Cooper or Bronwyn or Addie or Nate, and nobody thinks the teacher who was there could have had anything to do with it, who does that leave? He layers one post-it on top of the other on the wall next to the booth, then sits back and looks at us with polite attentiveness. Simon was poisoned during detention. Simon was depressed. We're all silent for a long minute, until Bronwyn exhales a small gasp. I'm the omniscient narrator, she says. What? Addie asks. That's what Simon said before he died. I said there wasn't any such thing in teen movies, and he said there was in life. Then he drained his drink in one gulp. Bronwyn turns and calls, Eli! But the door's already closing behind Nate's lawyer. So you're saying, Ashton stares around the table until her eyes land on Chris, you think Simon committed suicide? Chris nods. But why? Why like that? Let's go back to what we know, Bronwyn says. Her voice is almost clinical, but her face is flushed brick red. Simon was one of those people who thought he should be at the center of everything, but wasn't. And he was obsessed with the idea of making some kind of huge, violent splash at school. He fantasized about it all the time on those 4chan threads. What if this was his version of a school shooting. Kill himself and take a bunch of students down with him, but in an unexpected way. Like framing them for murder. She turns to her sister. What did Simon say on 4chan, Maeve? Do something original. Surprise me when you take out a bunch of lemming assholes. Maeve nods. Exact quote, I think. I think about how Simon died. Choking. Panicked, trying to catch his breath. If he really did it to himself, I wish more than ever we'd found his damn EpiPen. I think he regretted it at the end, I say, the weight of the words settling heavy on my heart. He looked like he wanted help. If he could have gotten medication in time, maybe a close call like that would have jolted him into being a different kind of guy. Chris's hand squeezes mine under the table. Bronwyn and Addie both look like they're back in the room where Simon died, horrified and stunned. They know I'm right. Silence descends, and I think we might be done until Maeve looks over at the post-it wall and sucks in her cheeks. But how does Jake fit in? She asks. Chris hesitates and clears his throat, like he's waiting for permission to speak. When nobody protests, he says, If Jake isn't Simon's killer, he must be his accomplice. Someone had to keep things going after Simon died. He meets Bronwyn's eyes, and some kind of understanding passes between them. They're the brains of this operation. The rest of us are just trying to keep up. Chris's hand pulled away from mine while he was talking, and I take it back. Simon found out about Addie and TJ, Bronwyn says. Maybe that's how he approached Jake in the first place to get his help. Jake would have wanted revenge because he... A chair scrapes noisily beside me as Addie pushes herself away from the table. Stop, she says in a choked voice, her purple-streaked hair falling into her eyes. Jake wouldn't. He couldn't. I think we've had enough for one night. Ashton says, firmly getting to her feet. You guys keep going, but we need to get home. Sorry, Addie, Bronwyn says with a chagrined expression. I got carried away. Addie waves a hand. It's fine, she says unsteadily. I just can't right now.
Ashton links arms with her until they get to the door. Then she pulls it open and lets Addie slip through ahead of her. Maeve watches them, her chin in her hands.
She has a point. The whole thing sounds impossible, doesn't it? And even if we're right, we can't prove anything.
She looks hopefully at Chris, as though she's willing him to work more post-it magic. Chris shrugs and taps the colored square closest to him.
Perhaps there's one person remaining who knows something useful.
Janae seems depressed.
Bronwyn and Maeve leave around 9, and Chris and I don't stay much longer. We gather up the table debris that's left and deposit it in the trash can next to the exit. We're both quiet, coming off one of the weirdest dates in history.
Well, Chris says, pushing through the door and pausing on the sidewalk to wait for me.
That was interesting.
Before he can say anything else, I grab him and press him against the coffee shop wall, my fingers digging into his hair and my tongue sliding between his teeth in a deep, wanting kiss. He makes a sound like a surprised growl and pulls me hard against his chest. When another couple exits through the door and we break apart, he looks dazed. He straightens his shirt and runs a hand over his hair.
Thought you'd forgotten how to do that.
I'm sorry. My voice thickens with the need to kiss him again. It's not that I didn't want to. It's just...
I know.
Chris laces his fingers in mine and holds our hands up like a question.
Yes?
Yes, I say. And we start down the sidewalk together.
Nate. Wednesday, November 7th. 11:30 p.m. So here's how you deal with being locked up. You keep your mouth shut. Don't talk about your life or why you're there. Nobody cares unless they want to use it against you. You don't take shit from anyone. Ever. Juvenile detention's not Oz, but people will still fuck with you if they think you're weak. You make friends. I use the term loosely. You identify the least shitty people you can find and associate with them. Moving around in a pack is useful. You don't break rules, but you look the other way when someone else does. You work out and watch television. A lot. You stay under the guard's radar as much as possible, including the overly friendly woman who keeps offering to let you make calls from her office. You don't complain about how slowly time passes. When you've been arrested for a capital offense and you're 4 months away from your 18th birthday, days that crawl by are your friends. You come up with new ways to answer your lawyer's endless questions. Yeah, I leave my locker open sometimes. No, Simon's never been to my house. Yeah, we saw each other outside of school sometimes. The last time? Probably when I was selling him weed. Sorry, we're not supposed to talk about that, are we? You don't think about what's outside. Or who. Especially if she's better off forgetting you exist.
Chapter 29 Addie. Thursday, November 8th, 7 p.m. I keep reading through the About This Tumblr as if it's going to change, but it never does. Ashton's words loop through my head. Jake's a complete control freak. She's not wrong. But does that mean the rest of it has to be right? Maybe Jake told somebody else what I said and they wrote it. Or maybe it's all just a coincidence. Except a memory surfaces. From the morning of Simon's death, so seemingly insignificant that it hadn't crossed my mind till now. Jake, pulling my backpack off my shoulder, with an easy grin as we walked down the hallway together.
That's too heavy for you, baby. I've got it.
He'd never done that before, but I didn't question him. Why would I? And a phone that wasn't mine got pulled from my backpack a few hours later.
I'm not sure what's worse. That Jake might be part of something so awful, that I drove him to it, or that he's been putting on an act for weeks. His choice, Addie, Ashton reminds me. Plenty of people get cheated on and don't lose their minds. Take me, for example. I threw a vase at Charlie's head and moved on. That's a normal reaction. Whatever's going on here isn't your fault. That might be true, but it doesn't feel true. So I'm supposed to talk to Janae, who hasn't been in school all week. I tried texting her a few times after school and again after dinner, but she never responded. Finally, I decided to borrow TJ's trick. Find her address in the school directory and just show up. When I told Bronwyn, she offered to come along, but I thought it'd go better with only me. Janae never warmed up to Bronwyn all that much. Cooper insists on driving me, even though I tell him he'll need to wait in the car. There's no way Janae'll open up about anything if he's around.
That's fine, he says, as he pulls across the street from Janae's faux tutor house. Text me if things turn weird.
Will do, I say, giving him a salute as I close the door and cross the street. There aren't any cars in Janae's driveway, but lights are burning throughout the house. I ring the doorbell 4 times with no answer, glancing back at Cooper with a shrug after the last one. I'm about to give up when the door cracks and one of Janae's black-rimmed eyes stares out at me. What are you doing here? She asks. Checking on you? You haven't been around and you're not answering my texts. Are you all right? Fine. Janae tries to close the door, but I stick my foot in it to stop her. Can I come in? I ask. She hesitates, but releases the door and steps back, allowing me to push it forward and enter. When I get a good look at her, I almost gasp. She's thinner than ever, and angry red hives cover her face and neck. She scratches at them self-consciously. What? I'm not feeling well, obviously. I peer down the hallway. Anyone else home? No. My parents are out to dinner. Look, no offense, but do you have some reason for being here? Bronwyn coached me on what to say. I'm supposed to start with small, subtle questions about where Janae's been all week and how she's feeling, to follow up on the thread of Simon's depression and encourage her to tell me more. As a last resort, I can maybe talk about what Nate's facing as the DA's office tries to send him to an honest-to-God prison. I don't do any of that. Instead, I step forward and hug her, cradling her scrawny body as though she's a little kid who needs comforting. She feels like one, all weightless bones and fragile limbs. She stiffens, then slumps against me and starts to cry. Oh, my God, she says in a thick, raspy voice. It's all fucked up. Everything's so massively fucked up. Come on. I lead her to the living room sofa, where we sit, and she cries some more. Her head digs awkwardly into my shoulder while I pat her hair. It's stiff with product, her mouse-brown roots blending into shiny blue-black dye. Simon did this to himself, didn't he? I ask carefully. She pulls away and buries her head in her hands, rocking back and forth. How did you know? She chokes out. God. It's true. I didn't fully believe it till now. I'm not supposed to tell her everything. I'm actually not supposed to tell her anything. But I do. I can't think how else to have this conversation. When I finish, she rises and goes upstairs without a word. I wait for a couple of minutes, curling one hand on my lap and using the other to tug at my earring. Is she calling somebody? Getting a gun to blow my head off? Slitting her wrists to join Simon? Just when I think I might have to go after her, Janae thuds down the stairs, holding a thin sheaf of papers she thrusts toward me.
Simon's manifesto, she says, with a sour twist of her mouth. It's supposed to be sent to the police a year from now, after all your lives are completely screwed, so everyone would know he pulled it off. The papers tremble in my hand as I read. Here's the first thing you need to know. I hate my life and everything in it. So I decided to get the hell out, but not go quietly. I thought a lot about how to do this. I could buy a gun, like pretty much any asshole in America, bar the doors one morning, and take out as many Bayview lemmings as I have bullets for before turning the last one on myself. And I'd have a lot of bullets. But that's been done to death. It doesn't have the same impact anymore. I want to be more creative, more unique. I want my suicide to be talked about for years. I want imposters to try to imitate me and fail, because the planning this takes is beyond your average depressed loser with a death wish. You've been watching it unfold for a year now. If it's gone the way I hope, you have no clue what actually happened. I look up from the papers. Why? I ask, bile rising in my throat. How did Simon get to this point? He'd been depressed for a while, Janae says, kneading the fabric of her black skirt between her hands. The stacks of studded bracelets she wears on both arms rattle with the movement. Simon always felt like he should get a lot more respect and attention than he did, you know. But he got really bitter about it this year. He started spending all his time online with a bunch of creepers, fantasizing about getting revenge on everyone who made him miserable. It got to the point where I don't think he even knew what was real anymore. Whenever something bad happened, he blew it way out of proportion. Words are tumbling out of her now. He started talking about killing himself and taking people with him, but like, creatively. He got obsessed with the idea of using the app to frame everyone he hated. He knew Bronwyn cheated, and it pissed him off. She practically had valedictorian sewn up anyway, but she made it impossible for him to catch up. He thought she'd screwed him out of going to the Model UN finals, too. And he couldn't stand Nate because of what happened with Keeley. Simon had thought he had a shot with her, and then Nate stole her away without even trying or actually giving a fuck. My heart contracts. God, poor Nate. What a stupid, pointless reason to end up in jail. What about Cooper? Did Simon involve him because of Keeley, too? Janae snorts out a bitter laugh. Mr. Nice Guy. Cooper got Simon blacklisted from Vanessa's after prom party. Even though Simon was on the court and everything, he was so humiliated that he was not only not invited, but actually not even allowed to go. Everyone was going to be there, he said. Cooper did? I blink. That's news to me. Cooper hadn't mentioned it, and I never even noticed Simon wasn't there. Which I guess was part of the problem. Janae bobs her head. Yeah, I don't know why, but he did. So those three were Simon's targets, and he had his gossip all lined up. I still thought it was just talk, though, a way to blow off steam. Maybe it would have been if I could have convinced him to get offline and stop obsessing. But then Jake found out something Simon didn't want anyone to know. And it just... that was the final straw. Oh, no. Every second that went by without a mention of Jake's name made me hope he wasn't involved after all. What do you mean? I pull at my earrings so hard, I'm in danger of tearing a lobe. Janae picks at her chipped nail polish, sending gray flakes across her skirt. Simon rigged the votes so he'd be on the junior prom court. My hand freezes at my ear, and my eyes go wide. Janae huffs out a humorless little laugh. I know, Stupid, right? Simon was weird like that. He'd make fun of people for being lemmings, but he still wanted the same things they did. And he wanted them to look up to him. So he did it. And he was gloating about it at the pool last summer, saying how easy it was, and how he'd mess with homecoming too. And Jake overheard us. I can immediately picture Jake's reaction, so Janae's next words don't surprise me. He laughed his head off. Simon freaked. He couldn't stand the thought of Jake telling people, and everyone at school knowing he'd done something so pathetic. Like, he'd spent years spilling everybody's secrets, and now he was going to get humiliated with one of his own. She cringes. Can you imagine? The creator of About That getting exposed as such a wannabe. It sent him over the edge. The edge? I echo. Yeah. Simon decided to stop talking about his crazy plan and to actually do it. He already knew about you and TJ, but he'd been sitting on that till school started again. So he used it to shut Jake up and bring him in. Because Simon needed somebody to keep things going after he died, and I wouldn't do it. I don't know whether to believe her or not. You wouldn't? No, I wouldn't. Janae doesn't meet my eyes. Not for your sake. I didn't care about any of you. For Simon's sake. But he wouldn't listen to me, and then all of a sudden, he didn't need me. He knew what Jake was like. That he'd lose it when he found out about you and TJ. Simon told Jake he could plant everything on you so you'd take the fall and wind up in jail. And Jake was totally on board. He even came up with the idea of sending you to the nurse's office that day for Tylenol so you'd look more guilty. White noise buzzes through my brain. The perfect revenge for cheating on a perfect boyfriend. I'm not sure I've said it out loud until Janae nods. Right. And no one would ever guess, since Simon and Jake weren't even friends. For Simon, there was the added bonus that he didn't care if Jake screwed up and got caught. He was almost hoping he would. He'd hated Jake for years. Janae's voice rises, like she's warming up for the kind of bitch session she and Simon probably used to have all the time. The way Jake just dropped Simon freshman year, started hanging out with Cooper like they'd always been best friends, as if Simon didn't exist anymore, like he didn't matter. Saliva swims at the back of my throat. I'm going to throw up. No, pass out. Maybe both. Either would be better than sitting here listening to this. All that time after Simon died, when Jake comforted me, made me drive to a party with TJ like nothing happened. Slept with me. He knew. He knew I cheated, and he was just biding his time, waiting to punish me. That might be the worst part. How normal he acted the whole time. Somehow, I find my voice. But Nate was framed. Did Jake change his mind? It hurts how much I want that to be true. Janae doesn't answer right away. The room's silent, except for her ragged breathing. No, she says finally. The thing is, it all unfolded almost exactly the way Simon planned. He and Jake snuck those phones into your backpacks that morning, and Mr. Avery found them and gave you detention. Just like Simon said he would. He made it easy for the police to investigate by keeping the About That admin site wide open. He wrote an outline of the Tumblr journal and told Jake to post updates from public computers with details about what was really happening. It was like watching some out-of-control reality TV show where you keep thinking producers are going to step in and say, "Enough!" But nobody did. It made me sick. I kept telling Jake he needed to stop before it went too far. My gut twists. And Jake wouldn't. J. Janae sniffs. No. He got really into the whole thing once Simon died. Total power trip. Watching you guys get hauled into the station. Seeing the school scrambling and everybody freaking out about the tumbler. He liked having that control. She stops for a second and glances at me. I guess you'd know about that. Yeah, I guess I would. But I could do without the reminder right now. You could have stopped it, Janae, I say, my voice rising as anger starts to overtake my shock. You should have told somebody what was going on. I couldn't, Janae says, hunching her shoulders. One time, when we were meeting with Simon, Jake recorded us on his phone. I was trying to talk sense into Simon, but the way Jake edited things made it sound like it was practically my idea. He said he'd give the recording to the police and pin everything on me if I didn't help. She takes a deep, shuddering breath. I was supposed to plant all the evidence on you. You remember that day I came to your house? I had the computer with me then. But I couldn't do it. After that, Jake kept harassing me and I panicked. I just dumped everything on Nate. She chokes out a sob. It was easy. Nate doesn't lock anything. And I called in the tip about him instead of you. Why? My voice is tiny, and my hands are shaking so badly that Simon's manifesto makes a rattling sound. Why didn't you stick to the plan? Janae starts rocking back and forth again. You were nice to me. Hundreds of people in that stupid school, and nobody, except you, ever asked if I missed Simon. I did. I do. I totally get how fucked up he was, but he was my only friend. She starts crying hard again, her thin shoulders shaking. Until you. I know we're not really friends, and you probably hate me now, but I couldn't do that to you. I don't know how to respond. And if I keep thinking about Jake, I'm going to lose it. My mind latches on to one small piece of this messed up puzzle that doesn't make sense. What about Cooper's entry? Why would Simon write the truth and then replace it with a lie? That was Jake, Janae says, swiping at her eyes. He made Simon change it. He said he was doing Cooper a favor, but I don't know. I think it was more he didn't want anyone to know his best friend was gay, and he seemed pretty jealous of all the attention Cooper was getting for baseball. My head's spinning. I should be asking more questions, but I can think of only one. Now what? You can't let Nate get convicted, Janae. You're going to tell someone, right? You have to tell someone. Janae passes a hand over her face. I know. I've been sick about it all week. But the thing is, I don't have anything except this printout. Jake has the video version on Simon's hard drive, along with all the backup files that show he'd planned the whole thing for months. I brandish Simon's manifesto like a shield. This is good enough. This and your word is plenty. What would even happen to me? Janae mutters under her breath. I'm like aiding and abetting, right? Or obstructing justice. I could wind up in jail. And Jake has that recording hanging over my head. He's already pissed at me. I've been too afraid of him to go to school. He keeps stopping by and... The doorbell chimes, and she freezes as my phone rings out with a text. Oh, God, Addie, that's probably him. He only ever comes by when my parents' car isn't in the driveway. My phone blares with a message from Cooper.
Jake's here. What's going on?
I grab hold of Janae's arm. Listen, let's do to him exactly what he did to you. Talk to him about all this, and we'll record it. Do you have your phone on you? Janae pulls it out of her pocket as the doorbell rings again.
It won't do any good. He always makes me give it to him before we talk.
Okay, we'll use mine. I look into the darkened dining room across from us. I'll hide in there while you talk to him.
I don't think I can,
Janae whispers. I give her arm a hard shake. You have to. You need to make this right, Janae. It's gone way too far. My hands are trembling, but I manage to send a quick text to Cooper. It's fine. Just wait. And get to my feet, pulling Janae with me and shoving her toward the door. Answer it. I stumble into the dining room and sink to my knees, opening my phone's voice recorder app and pressing play. I put it as close as I dare to the entryway between the dining room and the living room, and scoot against the wall next to a china cabinet. At first, the blood rushing in my ears blocks out every other sound. But when it starts to recede, I hear Jake's voice.
Haven't you been at school?
I don't feel well, Janae says.
Really?
Jake's voice drips with contempt.
Me either, but I still show up. Which you need to do too. Business as usual, you know?
I have to strain to hear Janae.
Don't you think this has gone on long enough, Jake? I mean, Nate's in jail. I realize that's the plan and all, but now that it's happening, it's pretty messed up.
I'm not sure the phone's going to be able to pick her up, but there's not much I can do about it. I can't exactly stage direct her from the dining room.
I knew you were freaking out.
Jake's voice carries easily.
No, we fucking can't, Janae. That'd put us both at risk. Anyway, sending Nate to jail was your choice, wasn't it? That should have been Addie, which is why I'm here, by the way. You fucked that up and need to turn it around. I have some ideas.
Janae's voice gets a little stronger.
Simon was sick, Jake. Killing yourself and framing other people for murder is crazy. I want out. I won't tell anybody you're involved, but I want us to, I don't know, put out an anonymous note that says it was a hoax or something. We have to make it stop.
Jake snorts.
Not your call, Janae. Don't forget what I have on hand. I can put everything on your doorstep and walk away. There's nothing to tie me to any of this.
Wrong, asshole, I think. Then time seems to stop as a text message from Cooper crosses my phone with a loud blare of Rihanna's Only Girl.
You okay?
I forgot the all-important step of silencing my phone before using it as a spy device.
What the hell? Addie?
Jake roars. I don't even think. Just take off out of the dining room and through Janae's kitchen, thanking God that she has a back door I can burst through. Heavy footsteps pound behind me. So instead of going for Cooper's car, I run straight into the dense woods behind Janae's house. I fly through the underbrush in a panic, dodging bushes and overgrown roots until my foot hooks under something and I tumble to the ground. It's like the gym track all over again. Knees torn, breath gone, palms raw. Except this time, my ankles twisted also. I hear branches crashing behind me, farther away than I would have thought, but heading straight to me. I get to my feet, wincing, and weigh my options. One thing's sure, after everything I heard in the living room, Jake's not leaving these woods till he finds me. I don't know if I can hide, and I sure as hell can't run. I take a deep breath, scream, "Help!" at the top of my lungs, and take off again, trying to zigzag away from where I think Jake is, while still getting closer to Janae's house. But oh God, my ankle hurts so badly. I'm barely dragging myself forward, and the noises behind me get louder until a hand catches my arm and yanks me back. I manage to scream once more before Jake clamps his other hand over my mouth.
You little bitch, he says hoarsely. You brought this on yourself, you know that?
I sink my teeth into Jake's palm, and he lets out an animal sound of pain, dropping his hand and lifting it just as quickly to strike me across the face.
I stagger, my face aching, but manage to stay upright and twist in an attempt to connect my knee to his groin and my nails to his eye. Jake grunts again when I make contact, stumbling enough that I break free and spin away. My ankle buckles, and his hand locks around my arm, tight as a vice. He pulls me toward him and grips me hard by the shoulders. For one bizarre second, I think he's going to kiss me. Instead, he shoves me to the ground, kneels down, and slams my head on a rock. My skull explodes with pain, and my vision goes red around the edges, then black. Something presses across my neck, and I'm choking. I can't see anything, but I can hear.
You should be in jail instead of Nate, Addy, Jake snarls as I claw at his hands. But this works, too.
A girl's panicked voice pierces the pain in my head. Jake, stop! Leave her alone! The awful pressure releases, and I gasp for air. I hear Jake's voice, low and angry, then a shriek and a thud. I should get up, right now. I reach my hands out, feeling grass and dirt beneath my fingers as I scramble to find an anchor. I just need to pull myself off the ground and get these starbursts out of my eyes, one thing at a time. Hands are at my throat again, squeezing. I lash out with my legs, willing them to work the way they do on my bike, but they feel like spaghetti. I blink, blink, blink some more, until I can finally see. Except now I wish I couldn't. Jake's eyes flash silver in the moonlight, filled with a cold fury. How did I not see this coming? I can't budge his hands no matter how hard I try. Then I can breathe again as Jake flies backward, and I wonder dimly how and why he did that. Sounds fill the air as I roll onto my side, gasping to fill my empty lungs. Seconds or minutes pass, it's hard to tell, until a hand presses my shoulder, and I blink into a different pair of eyes, kind, concerned, and scared as shitless as I am.
Cooper,
I rasp. He pulls me into a sitting position, and I let my head fall against his chest, feeling his heart hammering against my cheek as the distant wail of sirens draws closer.
Chapter 30.
Nate. Friday, November 9th, 3:40 p.m. I know something's different by how the guard looks at me when he calls my name. Not as much like a piece of dirt he wants to grind under his shoe as usual.
Bring your things, he says.
I don't have much, but I take my time shoving everything into a plastic bag before I follow him down the long gray corridor to the warden's office. Eli hovers in the doorway with his hands in his pockets, giving me that intense stare of his times 100.
Welcome to the rest of your life, Nate.
When I don't react, he adds,
You're free. You're out. This whole thing was a hoax that's been blown wide open. So get out of that jumpsuit and into civilian clothes, and let's get you the hell out of here.
At this point, I'm used to doing what I'm told, so that's all I do. Nothing else registers. Even when Eli shows me news stories about Jake's arrest. Until he tells me Addie's in the hospital with a concussion and a fractured skull.
Good news is, it's a hairline fracture with no underlying brain injury. She'll make a full recovery.
Addie, that airhead homecoming princess turned badass ninja investigator. In the hospital with a cracked skull because she tried to help me. Possibly only alive because of Janae, who got a busted jaw for her trouble. And Cooper, who's suddenly some kind of superhero the media's fawning over. I'd be happy for him if the whole thing didn't make me sick. There's a lot of paperwork when you get out of jail for a crime you didn't commit. Law and order never shows how many forms you have to fill out before you rejoin the world. The first thing I see when I step blinking into bright sunshine is a dozen cameras whirring to life. Of course. This whole thing's a never-ending movie, and I've gone from villain to hero in a matter of hours, even though I haven't done a single thing to make a difference since I got here. My mother's outside, which I guess is a pleasant surprise. I'm never not prepared for her to disappear. And Bronwyn, even though I specifically said I didn't want her anywhere near this place. Guess nobody thought I was serious about that. Before I can react, her arms are around me, and my face is buried in her green apple hair. Jesus. This girl. For a few seconds, I breathe her in, and everything's all right. Except it's not. Nate, how does it feel to be free? Do you have any comments about Jake? What's your next step? Eli shoots sound bites at all the microphones in my face as we make our way to his car. He's the man of the hour, but I don't see what he did to earn it. The charges were dropped because Bronwyn kept unraveling threads and tracked down a witness. Because Cooper's boyfriend connected dots nobody else saw. Because Addie put herself in the line of fire. And because Cooper saved the day before Jake could shut her up. I'm the only one in the murder club who didn't contribute a goddamn thing. All I did was be the guy who's easy to frame. Eli inches his car past all the media vans until we're on the highway, and the juvenile detention center fades to a speck in the distance. He's rattling on about too many things to follow. How he's working with Officer Lopez to get my drug charges dropped. How if I want to make a statement through the media, he'd recommend Mikhail Powers. How I need a strategy for reintegrating into school. I stare out the window, my hand a dead weight in Bronwyn's. When I finally hear Eli's voice asking if I have any questions, I can tell he's been repeating himself for a while.
Did someone feed Stan? I ask.
My father sure as shit didn't.
I did, Bronwyn says.
When I don't respond, she squeezes my hand and adds,
Nate, are you all right?
She tries to catch my eye, but I can't do it. She wants me to be happy, and I can't do that either. The impossibility of Bronwyn hits me like a punch to the gut. Everything she wants is good and right and logical, and I can't do any of it. She'll always be that girl in front of me in the scavenger hunt. Her shining hair hypnotizing me so much I almost forget how uselessly I'm trailing behind her. I just want to go home and sleep. I'm still not looking at Bronwyn, but out of the corner of my eye I can see her face fall. And for some reason, that's perversely satisfying. I'm disappointing her right on schedule. Finally, something makes sense.
Cooper. Saturday, November 17th, 9:30 a.m. It's pretty surreal to come downstairs for breakfast Saturday morning to my grandmother reading an issue of People with me on the cover. I didn't pose for it. It's a shot of Chris and me leaving the police station after giving our statements. Chris looks fantastic, and I look like I just woke up after a night of heavy drinking. It's obvious which of us is the model. Funny how this accidental fame thing works. First, people supported me even though I'd been accused of cheating and murder. Then they hated me because of who I turned out to be. Now they love me again because I was in the right place at the right time and managed to flatten Jake with a well-aimed punch. And because of the halo effect of being with Chris, I guess. Eli's giving him full credit for figuring out what really happened. So he's the new breakout star of this whole mess. The fact that he's trying to avoid the media machine only makes them want him more. Lucas sits across from Nani, spooning Cocoa Puffs into his mouth while scrolling through his iPad.
Your Facebook fan page has 100,000 likes now, he reports, flicking a strand of hair out of his face like it's an annoying bug. This is good news for Lucas, who took it personally when most of my so-called fans deserted the page after